And we're holding on page Tes Vav in Yerushalmi Rosh Hashanah, Ois Zayin. Still in the middle of talking about the judgment of Hashem on Rosh Hashanah. So the Mishnah had said, "Rosh Hashanah kol boi olam ovrin l'fanav k'vnei morin." On Rosh Hashanah, everybody passes by in front of Hashem like bnei morin. We have that's where the line in Unasana Tokef comes from. So what does k'vnei morin mean? And the Bavli over here also has several different explanations. Rabbi Acha omar kohodin divin. So Rabbi Acha says, like the way that animals come out of a pen, when you're counting, in particular, when you're counting the newborn sheep or goats or cattle to take Maaseh Behemah for the year, so you have to put them in a pen and you have a narrow entrance, a narrow exit, whatever way, they can only go out one at a time, because otherwise you're going to get mixed up in the count. So the point is, in other words, the animals go single file, the same way everybody goes single file in front of Hashem, and Hashem looks at every person individually. So then, according to that, kivnei moron, one meaning of it would be that that moron is Moshe Imra, which is the Aramaic word for a sheep. Bamgnimin, however you pronounce it, the Rabbanan say like a bamgnimin. So what is that? There are actually several explanations. Eitz Yosef and some of the Mefoshim on the Yerushalmi itself say also that it means like a narrow entrance. Same idea. Everybody's going single file. Pnei Moshe on Yerushalmi gives a different explanation. He says that a bam gnimin is it's like something like a telescope that astronomers use to look at the sky. So in other words, in principle, an astrologer uses that and he knows everybody's future based on that. So in other words, the idea would be that Hashem is looking at everybody, so to speak, with the tool that an astrologer uses to know what their future is going to be. In other words, everybody's passing in front of Hashem on Rosh Hashanah, and he knows exactly what's going to be with them during the coming year. Yet another possibility, the Oruch HaSholem brings up an idea that maybe the word means a type of die, and in that case, it's al derech, also like you have by Maaseh Behemah, where the animals go through single file, and then every tenth one is marked with red paint. So it would be a similar idea. In other words, so to speak, everybody is being painted with the same brush by Hashem, even though everybody is being looked at individually. But on the other hand, Hashem is also looking at everybody collectively at the same time. In fact, the in the Gemara it brings a brice on this. Everybody is gazed at with one gaze. In other words, even though Hashem is looking at everybody individually, he's also at the same time looking at everybody collectively, which of course a boss of Adam wouldn't be able to do. But the word skira is also related to the word sikra, as in the paint that they put on the animal for Maaseh Behemah. So therefore, it may be kind of a play on words, kadob bangaminin, where in other words, that Hashem is looking at everybody individually, but Hashem is also, so to speak, painting them with one brush. With skira achas, with one brush stroke. Anyway, my timer. Where do we see such a thing in a pasuk? As the pasuk says, "Hayotze yachad libam." Hashem creates all their hearts together. Hamevino kol maaseim, and Hashem understands everything that they're doing. So, in other words, Hashem is able to look at everybody individually and collectively at the same time. But now the question then is, Eitz Yosef explains, now the implicit question is that Hayotze Yachad Libam suggests that Hashem is looking at everybody collectively, Yachad, and then Hamevino Kol Maaseim would be individually, where he was saying the other way around, that first everybody goes individually and then Hashem is next looking at them collectively. So why is it in the opposite order in the pasuk? Amar Rav Levi, it means Hayotze Yachad Libam Kvar Hevino Kol Maaseim. It means when Hashem is creating and looking at their hearts altogether, Hashem has already considered their maasim on an individual level. And the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Elazar, B'noyeg Sheba'olam, you consider the way it usually works in the world. Consider, for example, the word Yotzer also means a potter. So consider, man noyach la yotzer hazeh. What is easier for a potter? Lasas meyakan kanim, to make 100 barrels, or listakel behem, or to look at them. Obviously, loyle is takel behem. Isn't it easier to look at them? So in other words, the point is, in other words, the point is that for a potter, it's harder to make them and much easier to look at them, whereas for Hashem, it's all the same thing. To look at everybody and to create everybody is exactly the same kind of effort for Hashem, which is to say no effort at all. So in the same way, in other words, Hashem created everybody, and Hashem examines everybody, particularly on Yom Kippur, in order to do good for them. So that's the, in effect, the purpose for which Hashem made everybody is to be able to look at them and to be able to be proud of what they've accomplished. Similar to the way, so in other words, the mashal is the way that a potter makes his kelim so that he has beautiful objects to look at. Another meaning of yachad libon, besides that it means that Hashem puts their hearts all together and looks at everybody collectively, it also means yotzron, the creator of everyone. Yachad means it as one, roitzer. He wants yachad libon, he wants that all their hearts should be united towards him. So the yachad doesn't just mean that Hashem looks at everybody collectively. It means Hashem's purpose. Hashem wants that everybody should be in a state of yachad. Amr Rav Ovin, and Rav Ovin says another way of understanding the pasuk: Mishu yachad ba'olamai. Hashem was the unique one in the world. Kvar havenes kol maaseihem, has already understood everything they're doing even before they do it. As we learned before, the Gemara had brought up the question: doesn't Hashem know in advance? Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu roeh es hanolad. And the answer is Hashem judges a person the way he is right now, but nevertheless, Hayotzer Yachad, Meloshen Yachid, Libam, Hashem already knows when he created them what Libam is going to be like, and Maven al Kol Maaseihem, but Hashem judges them as they are right now. Okay. Then the Gemara goes on to talk about a point, which is also brought in the Bavli, that you can have a situation where Hashem is, where, for example, Rosh Hashanah, the people were Rishoyim. So Hashem decided that year there's going to be very little rainfall. Later on during the year, they do tshuva. So instead of tearing up the Gzar Din and rewriting it that they'll have plentiful rain, instead Hashem makes sure that every drop of rain will go where it's supposed to. Not a bit of it will go to waste. And then the Gemara discusses you can have the other way around as well. So in this connection, the Gemara explains, Siv, you have the Pasuk, Enei Hashem Elokecha Ba, the eyes of Hashem are on Eretz Yisrael, and via it, the rest of the world, Mereshis Hashanah, from the beginning of the year, Mereshis Hashanah Ba'ad Achris Hashanah. So why the expression from the beginning to the end of the year? So you actually have in Tanya, in Egeres Yudalad, the Alter Rebbe points out that because every year there's a new Ur that comes Milamayla, so therefore it doesn't just say La'olam Vod, because every year, Mereshis Hashanah, there's a new thing. But Kahana Omar, Rav Kahana, now you have, there's a lot of Rav Kahanas in Shas. The particular Kahana that we're talking about over here is the one who was actually a chaver of Rav, and therefore, just like we find, for example, Shmuel is often called Shmuel without his title, the same way Rav Kahana in the Yerushalmi is sometimes called Kahana without his title. Anyway, so he points out, Meiroshis, the word in the Pasuk, Meiroshis, is missing the Aleph. So we can read it, Meloshin Rosh, as Meloshin Pur. So therefore, van achris shana. So when it says, so therefore, we can reread the pasuk as if it's saying from the poverty of the year until the end of the year, where the word achris also, besides meaning the end, also means like the future and the hope. Losses lachem achris v'sikva. For example, you have a lashon pasuk that Hashem says, "I'm going to give you a future and a hope." So therefore, it means van achris shana mar. Madvelo, you can have a situation where Hashem made the year poor and miserable at the beginning, may roshis, meloshin rosh, and poor, the yohav la achris tofa b'sefer, but Hashem gives it a good hope in the end, because again, we're talking about a situation, for example, where they weren't such tzaddikim, Rosh Hashanah, and then later on they do tshuva, and so that year that began poorly ends up becoming a very rich year. The Bavli also makes a point. You have the Lashon Kol Shana Shel Rosh Betchilas Mizasheres B'Sofer, that any year that's poor at the beginning will be rich at the end. And one meaning of it is when the people feel themselves poor and they realize that we depend completely on the Eibishter, so then such a year will have an Achris. So that's also something that we learn from this Mereshis spelt without the Aleph. Perek Ein Makirin, so the second Perek of Rosh Hashanah continues to deal with the dinim of Kiddush HaChodesh, the Edom coming to testify for Kiddush HaChodesh and based in cross-examining them, etc. So the Mishnah mentions one of the first things they would ask the Edom, Lifnei HaChama or La'achar HaChama, was the moon ahead of the sun or behind it? And both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi explain that the meaning of the question was they were asking them, was the like this, the moon appears at the beginning of the month as a crescent, was the inside of the crescent, the concave side of the crescent, facing towards the sun? And if they say yeah, then we dismiss them right away because it doesn't work that way. The lit side of the moon always faces the lit side of the moon. Whenever we can see the moon, the moon, the any of the lit part of the moon, it's always facing the sun. So the Gemara brings in that connection. The Bavli also brings over here the pasuk Oisah Shalom Bimraimov, that Hashem makes Shalom in the heights, in the sense that therefore Hashem made it that the moon's concave side, the moon's unlit side, never faces the sun, because that would humiliate it. In other words, the point is, if it weren't for that, the Eibishter could have arranged with various things to reflect one thing would reflect another, and it would come out that it would that it could face that way, but it doesn't. So now, what?
Isn't it that in the beginning of the month, one side of the moon is lit, and then it goes all the way, and then the other side is lit?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we always see from Earth, we always see only one side of the moon. So during at the beginning of the month, the lit side is completely facing away from us, and in the middle of the month, the lit side is completely facing us. Yeah, but right, in terms of the sun
should face the moon, face the sun.
No, so the point is, in other words, that the lit side of the moon, whenever we see light from the moon, it's always reflected from the sun. So therefore, the lit side is always going to be facing the sun. When we see a crescent at the beginning of the month, what it is most of the lit side is facing away from us. And only a tiny little bit of it also is facing towards the sun and also facing towards us. But b'derech hateva, you would say that's just how it is when you have one thing reflecting from another. But the Gemara is explaining that it's more than that. The Eibishter arranged it that way because oisah shalom bimraimov. So the Gemara brings in this connection. Tani Reb Shimon ben Yochai. Here is another example of oisah shalom bimraimov. Lafisha rakia shamayim. Consider that the heavens are made out of water. And the stars that are in the sky are made out of fire. And yet they live peacefully one with another. They don't harm one another, even though fire and water are natural antagonists. But the Eibishter makes them makes them cooperate in the heavens. So that's another example of that Hashem makes peace in his heights between the fire and water that are there. In fact, Rashi points out, we have in last week's parasha, that one meaning of Shemayim is Eshumayim, that Hashem mixed together, Esh and Mayim, and created the heavens, and that's an example where the Eibishter has them blend together and work together. Another example, Amar Abavin, HaMalach Atzma, Chetz Yemayim, Chetz Yeesh. A Malach himself is made up of half fire, of half water and half fire. The Isbe Chomish Gapin, and you should realize, by the way, that a Malach is described in a pasuk as having five different aspects. Daniel describes a Malach that appeared to him and told him various things of what's going to happen in future Jewish history. So Daniel describes him, his body was like Taushish, where one meaning of Taushish can mean a precious stone, like you have in the Choshen, Taushish Shoyam V'yoshve. It can also mean, actually, the word Taushish sometimes means the ocean. When you have, for example, in Mafri Yonah, Vayim Tsa'oni Abba Taushish, Taushish can be a particular place where they went to, but it can also mean the ocean in general. So there's also an explanation, I think the Gemara says someplace, that it means that the Malach's body is the size of the ocean. So in that sense, then also he can be compared to water. Ufonav Kumare Vora, his face was like the appearance of lightning, very fiery and majestic. The Enov Kilapide Esh, his eyes were like flaming torches. Uzroosov Magloisov Kain Nechoshes Kolol, his arms and his legs were like polished copper. The Kirl Dvorov Kirl Homain, and the sound of his voice was like the sound of a huge number of people, a huge loud sound. And Daniel describes how frightened he was by the vision of this Malach. So we see that the Malach is described with these five kinds of adjectives. And the point is that we're saying that he resembles Taushish, but he also has a fiery aspect in him. And also, Eitz Yosef points out, the Kol Homoin means also a sound of rushing water. So in other words, the Malach has a large component of him that's water, but also a large component of him that's fire. And yet we're saying the two parts coexist within him because the Eibishter made him that way and overrides the qualities of Mayim and Esh. We have the idea, Mayim represents Chesed, Esh represents Gvura, and the Eibishter is Oisah Shalom between them, in the sense that he's being Mashpia on them, a higher level of course, beyond Chesed, beyond Gvura, which is Kolo, both of them together. Okay. Perak Ra'uhu Beistin, so the beginning of the Perak continues talking about the Dinim of Kiddush HaChodesh, but then most of the rest of the Perak deals with the Dinim of Tkiyas Shofar. So in that connection, then the Gemara mentions they have certain details as far as the so the Gemara actually goes into a bit of a digression over there, talking about the point that so we know besides that you blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, you also blow shofar on Yom Kippur of Yovel. So that leads the Gemara into a bit of discussion about the mitzvah of shiluach avodim, the mitzvah of sending the avodim knanim and sending an eved ivri, not avodim knanim, an eved ivri, sorry, an eved ivri and an omer ivri are free after six years or after yovel, whichever comes first. And the Gemara mentions in that connection that mitzvah was given to the Jewish people even before they left Mitzrayim. When it says Vayitzavim or Bnei Yisrael, the beginning of Parshas Vayera, it means that the Eibishter told them the mitzvah of Shiluach Avodim, and hundreds of years later, Yirmiyah tells off the people, it's in the Haftorah, Parshas Mishpatim, that they're not keeping the mitzvah, and that mitzvah, and they're keeping them beyond the 6 years, and therefore Yirmiyah threatens them, the Golos and the Churban are going to come because of that. So the Gemara explains that you need a whole Gzeira Shava and you need a whole Limud over there to learn that this was the mitzvah that was given to them even before they left Mitzrayim, and that this was the mitzvah because of failure to keep it brought about the Churban. So in that connection, the Gemara mentions the example that many times, as we know, you have to learn something in Torah from something else. Divrei Torah, Ani b'makom echad, v'ashin b'makom acher. So Toni b'shem Reb Nechemya, you learn in a Braisa in the name of Reb Nechemya, just that. When the Pasuk says in Eish Hischayil, where one of the meanings of all of the praises that we say in Eish Hischayil, one of the things it's all a mashal for the Torah. So Hoisa Karnia Socher, she's like ships that do business. I mean, Merchak Tovi Lachma, she brings her bread from far away. That means Divrei Torah, Ani Memakorimam, Vashinim Memakamacha. Many times you have things in Torah which it's poor in one place. You don't have the details given in one place, but they're rich in someplace else. You go to someplace else in Torah, like going in a ship and having to go to a faraway country, and that's where you find the missing puzzle piece, so to speak. So the same way over here, to understand this whole point that this mitzvah was given to them in Mitzrayim, and that's the very same one which for failure to do that brought about the Churban, you have to put together many psukim from widely separated parts of Tanakh in order to put that all together. Okay. At the end of the perek, it talks about, you have the famous thing, the Mishnah is mentioning about the importance that you have to have kavana when you're listening to the shofar, im kivin libi yotze, im lav lo yotze. So then the Mishnah brings in the famous thing. We see how important kavana is, as we see, for example, during the war with Amalek. V'haya kasha yorim Moshe yodei, then the Jewish people would be stronger. So what is this? Not Moshe's hands don't win the battle, but it's that everybody would, when they're looking up at Moshe's hands, they would have kavana towards the Eibishter, and then they would win. And the same thing by the Nachash and Nechoshes, the point is not the snake itself. The point is that they would look up and have kavana to the Eibishter. So that brings the Gemara into the point that so another point the Gemara makes is that when it says that Moshe lifted up his hands, also meant that he's showing them with that the importance of learning Torah. We find, in fact, where the Amalek attacked them in Refidim, and Rashi mentions Sherofu Yudeim Midivrei Torah. Their hands were slackened from learning Torah. So now, on the contrary, Moshe lifting up his hands and keeping them aloft the whole time represents that they have to focus themselves more on Torah from now on. So in that connection, the Gemara brings Amar of Yehuda. There's a pasuk where the Navi Hoshea says Zonach Yisrael Toiv. The Jewish people have abandoned goodness. Oyev Yudafai. The enemy is pursuing them. So what do we mean? If we just mean the goodness as like they don't have the gashmiistic comforts anymore, first of all, Oyev Yudafai has nothing to do with that directly. And second of all, it should be the other way around. Their enemies are pursuing them, therefore they've lost their toiv. So therefore we understand, since it's in this order, it means the other way around. Ve'en toiv ala Torah. The word toiv over here means Torah ha'udichtiv ki lekach toiv. As it says, I've given you a good teaching of Torah. So because zonach, because they abandoned the good of Torah, therefore oyev yudafoi, therefore when it says an enemy will pursue them, specifically which enemy? Ze'esav. Dichtiv, as we find a pasuk where Yechezkel describes them by the name Oyev, Ya'an Omer Ha'oyev Aleichem Ha'och V'gomer, because the enemy has said hooray about you, and he thinks Eretz Yisrael is desolate and I can take it over, which is a whole nevuah about Edom, that they think they can take over Eretz Yisrael now that the Jewish people are gone and golos from it, and Hashem says you're going to be severely punished for that. So we see that they're called Oyev in the pasuk. So the same thing in the pasuk in Hosea, then it means that the Oyev, specifically Esav, is going to be able to chase them. Why? Because Zonach Yisrael Toiv. V'chein Yitzchok Omer. We find Yitzchok expressing the same thing. Akol Kol Yaakov. Akol Kol Yaakov Ayidayim Yidei Esav. Kol Zman Shekol Yaakov Nomuch. As long as Yaakov's voice is low, and Hakosef points out in the Pasuk, the word Hakol is written without the Vav. So we can read it as if it said Hakal, which means that it's lightened, it's slacked off. The Kol, the voice, which should be strong, is now Kal, it's now light and weak. So as long as that voice is weak, Yidei Esav Sholtes Bo, then the hands of Esav are able to have control over him. V'chol Zman Sheyaakov Mitzafzef B'Kolo, whereas as long as Yaakov is making noise with his voice and learning Torah. In fact, Etz Yosef points out from Yafei Toyar that the word siftzuf, which suggests like chattering and twittering, like the way birds do, it means the little children are learning Torah, and they're saying in their high pitched voices, they're saying words of Torah, and the world stands on Hevel Piyam Shaltinokas Shabbos Rabban. So therefore, particularly that's what it means. Akol Kol Yaakov. Why Akol? What about Divrei Yaakov or whatever the words of Torah. It means just there's the voice. All you have is the voice of the little children learning Torah. As long as you have that, then the hands of Esav have no power over him. The Medrash, in fact, mentions in that connection on that pasuk, Akol Kol Yaakov, that they once asked a famous Goyish philosopher of that time, how the Goyim asked him, how can we overcome the Jews? And he says, if you go to their shuls and their bate medrash, as long as you hear the sound of Torah, then you better realize that, forget about it. Okay, Masechta Tainus Perek Rishon. So the first Perek of Tainus talks about the various dinim about saying Mashiv Ruach Amod Hageshem, but saying Talamotar, the various dinim of when you start and the different dinim about it. So again, in a roundabout way, as the Gemara often does, it ends up talking about the following piece. So the Gemara, in the course of the discussion, the Gemara brings up, you have Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua argue whether you begin saying Mashiv Ruach Amod Hageshem, whether you start Maskirin Gurus Gesham at the beginning of Sukkah, so the end. The halacha, of course, is like Rabbi Yeshua, we start only at the end. Anyway, in that connection, the Gemara tries to relate it or to contrast it with a machloekus of theirs about what's needed for Mashiach to come. Is it Rabbi Eliezer holds, it's also in the Bavli and Sanhedrin, that only if the Jewish people do tshuva, only then, nigolin, and if not, chas v'shalom, then not. And Rabbi Yeshua says one way or the other, the Eivishter is going to force the issue, if necessary, ma'amid lahem melech kosher kahaman. So in a roundabout way, the Gemara gets to the following point. Chad ba'nash have a ichta b'lishnei. There was a certain person who was stinning with his mouth, with his tongue, meaning he was saying Lashon Hara or Nivul Peh or whatever. One of the Mephoshim on the Yerushalmi, Pnei Moshe, I think, also says another meaning of it may have been that he was stuttering and otherwise couldn't speak clearly. And Rabbi Yochanan explained to him, or Rabbi Chanina explained to him, as we're going to have in the Gemara over here, that this is all as a result of him speaking Lashon Hara, that therefore the Eibishter gave him a speech defect. So either it's directly speaking Lashon Hara, or it's that he has a speech defect which can be traced to Lashon Hara. Anyway, also l'gabei de Rabbi Yochanan, and also l'gabei Rabbi Yochanan. So he came to Rabbi Yochanan to ask what to do. V'shalchei gabei Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Yochanan in turn referred him to Rabbi Chanina. Omalei, and Rabbi Chanina tells him, zil tohi bach, go back, go have charota on what you did. Tohi would be like toya al rishonis, like regret what you did wrong. V'loi b'raisa, and spend your time learning Torah. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, ma'pe loshen eitz chayim, a healing for the tongue is the tree of life, which is the Torah. So either, again, the guy had been speaking Lashon Hara, and now he wants to do tshuva on it. So the Chanina tells him it's a two-step process. First of all, do tshuva on it. And second of all, start using your tongue instead for Torah. According to the Pnei Moshe's explanation, the vote would be that the guy had a speech defect. So the Chanina tells him the reason for that speech defect is because you've been using your tongue for the wrong purposes. Therefore, now go have charata and go learn Torah, and that will heal. That will physically heal your tongue and your mouth. So then the Gemara goes on to talk about further about this matter of the Golos and the Gola. Omer Rav Chanina Brei de Rabbahu b'Sifre Shorav Meir Motzu Kosu. They found the following written in the Sefer of Rav Meir. Now, what does that mean? Different Mephoshim talk about different possibilities. There's a few places in Midrashim where you have this expression that they found b'Sifre Shorav Meir. So one explanation, it means that he wrote it in the margins of his Sefer Torah, because we're going to have, or in the margins of his book of Tanakh, because we're going to have different words over here, which is not the same as we have in the Masoda. So he's not obviously going to write it. He's not obviously going to write the words in Torah or the words in the Psukim and Nach differently than we have them. So one possibility is he wrote on the side and the margin. He wrote an alternate way of reading the word, which we can use for a drosha. A different explanation is he had a sefer where he would write private notes of his droshas and on Psukim. Bechlal, in Meir's times, you weren't allowed to write down Torah Shabbat Peh yet. But as the Rambam explained, the person was allowed to write for himself private notes to jog his memory. So then afterwards, Pashtus, after he passed away, they found records of some of these private notes of his. Anyway, so you have a posuk in Yeshaya that starts off Masa Duma. Masa is one of the names for Nevuah, and Duma in Poshet Pshat is the name of one of the sons of Yishmael, one of the nations descended from Yishmael, like you have at the end of Chayesaro, Mishma V'Duma Masa. But here, Reb Meir Darshan, that Duma over here actually refers to Rome, so he wrote over there, again, either in the side or in his collection of Darshas, Masa Roimi. That we darshan the word Duma as instead of with a dalet as if it was with a resh, so therefore it's actually a nevuah about Rome. Maybe it's related to Edom as well, but primarily he's saying that the dalet from Duma can be interchanged for a resh, and therefore Duma becomes Roima, which is Rome. Now you have the posse goes as follows. There's two psukim back to back over there in Yeshaya, so the Gemara is going to darshan them phrase by phrase. Masa Duma, let's talk about the simple meaning first. Masa Duma, the Nevuah about Duma, which again in Parshat Pshat is one of the sub-nations, one of the sub-tribes of Yishmael. Eli Koda Miseir, he calls to me from Seir. Shomer Mami Laila, watchman, what's of the night? Shomer Mami Leil, watchman, what's going on with the night? And the next pasuk continues. Omar Shomer, the watchman says, Osa Boiker, the morning is coming, Vegam Loila, and also the night. Im Tivoyun Ba'oyu, if you seek, if you'll diligently seek, Shuvoi saw you, then come and return. Those are the two psukim back to back. So now the Gemara is going to dash in those psukim phrase by phrase. When it says Eli Koda mi Seir, he calls to me from Seir, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Eli Koda mi Pnei Seir. Hashem is calling to me because of Seir. Now there's several different explanations what that means. One is that it means that because Seir, which is Edom, in particular Rome, is so powerful, so therefore the Eibishter is calling to me because of my tsar, because of our tsaris under Edom, and because of the how rich and powerful Edom is, that therefore the Eibishter is calling to me, do tshuva and get out of that golos. Amar Reb Shimon Lakish, and Rish Lakish explains differently. He darshans the word Eli to me as if it was Kaili, my God. So Kaili Kode Mipnei Seir. Hashem is calling to me because of Seir. Because we're having such tzaras from them, and because they're so powerful, Hashem is calling to me and asking me to do tshuva. Rather, Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Eli Kodem Ipnei Seir, Amar Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Keli, Me'echan Nizdavig Li, why is Hashem getting involved with me, like to fight on my behalf? Me Seir, he's coming from Seir. Because as you have in the Psukim in Yeshaya, where the Eibishter is metaphorically described, Mizebame Edom Chamutz Godem Mibatzra, that Hashem is described, so to speak, as a warrior coming with blood-stained clothes, and they ask him what's going on, and he's saying that I trampled and destroyed Seir and Edom. So therefore, the Shlokish understands our Pasuk, Eli Kodem Seir, in a similar vein, that Hashem is calling to me and saying, I'm fighting in Seir on your behalf. So Omer Reb Shur ben Levi. So in that, so Reb Shur ben Levi continues in that vein. Im yom alecha adam eichan hu alekecha. If someone asks you, where is your God? Emeloi b'krach ha'gadol shebaroimi. You can tell him he's in the great city of Rome. He's getting ready to punish and destroy them once and for all. Ma taima Kaili Kodi Miseir. Because again, Darshan in the word Eli, as if it was Kaili. My God is calling from Seir, and Hashem is saying it's time for the golos to be over. Akosev also points out it may also mean that because Rome was so rich and powerful and ruled the whole world and everything, it seemed people could imagine as though Hashem is literally there making them larger and bigger and stronger all the time. Now the pasuk continues, Shomer Mami Laila, watchman, what's going to be with the night, means Omru Yisrael Yeshaya. The Jewish people are asking the Navi, Rabbeinu Yeshaya, Ma Yotzalona Mitecha Laila Azet. What is going to come out for us out of this night of Golos? It can mean It can mean, when are we going to get out of the golos? It can also mean, Yufei Mara points out, it can also mean, what are we gaining? What do we have to gain from being in golos so long? The Eibishter could have found some other way to deal with our Averis without having to put us in, without having to put us through golos. So he answers them, I don't know myself. Wait until I ask Hashem. Kivinchen Shoal, he asks Hashem, Chozer Etzlam, and he returns to the Jewish people who are asking him. Omrulay, and again they tell him, Shomer Mami Leil, watchman, what's of the night, which also means we can darshan the word Mileil as speaking, like Mi Mila Lavraham. It can also be darshan Miloshin Yilola, as crying out. What is the watchman, what is Hashem crying out about us being in Golos? So Mami Leil, Shomer Herlamim, Hashem, who's the watchman of the entire world, what is he speaking or what is he crying out about our Golos? Omalahan, so he answers them with the next pasuk. Omar Shomer, the watchman, Hashem is saying, Osa Voiker, the morning is coming, the Gam Loila, Osa Voiker, the Gam Loila, but also the night. Omrulay, the Gam Loila, so they're saying that also the night, you mean that after the Geula, there's going to be another Golos? Omalahan, so Yeshaya explains to them, no, Loikam Moshatim Svurim, no, it's not like you think that it means there's going to be a temporary Geula and there's yet going to be another Golos after that. Rather, it means at the same time there's going to be morning and light for the tzaddikim and night and darkness for the rishoyim at the time of the Gola Mitzvah Shlema. There's going to be morning for those who are upright and honest, and night for those who are not. Omruloi Emas, so they ask him, when is this going to happen? Admosai, how long are we going to be in Golos? Omruloi, and he continues, he answers them with the continuation of the Pasuk. Emas Sa'atun Boyi, whenever you want, whenever you ask for it, as the Pasuk says, Im Tivoyun Boyu. If you want to ask, if you want to daven, ba, like you have an Aramaic, ba mine, it means to ask and to demand and so forth. So if you demand and if you ask for it, Omruloi Mima'akiv. So they ask him in that case, what's holding it back? Yes, we want the Gula Mitzvah Shlema right now. Omalahen, Shuva. He tells them what's missing. The missing factor is Shuva. Therefore, as the Pasuk finishes off, Shuvu Esoyu. Do Shuva and come back. So you need all of those factors. In other words, he's telling them you have to want the Gula, but you also have to do Shuva. Seder Tanius Ketzad Perek Sheni, so the second perek of Masechta Tainis deals with the whole Seder of the famous fasts that they would do when they had a series of fasts, because no rain is falling. They had three fasts, then another three, and then seven, and during the last group of seven, which were the most serious of all, they fasted them like Tisha B'Av or like Yom Kippur. Then they would bring out the Teva, which is the box with the Sifrei Torah, al derech like Aron Kodesh, out into the street, and they would daven there, and they had a whole ceremony involved. So the Gemara says, "Ksiv yetzei chosen mechedre v'chalom mechuposa." The Navi Yoel describes in his times there was a tremendous famine and a plague of locusts. We learned about it in Bavli Tainis about how at the end of it they had only a little grain left and they had that betochen and the Eibishter planted it. So Yoel is describing what kind of gathering for tshuva and tefillah you have to have. In fact, in some Minig Ashkenaz, they read it as part of the Haftorah for Shabbos tshuva, appropriately enough. Anyway, the pasuk says, "Yetzei chosen mechedrei." The chosen should go out of his chamber. The chala mechuposa, and the kala should come out of her chuppah, and they should join together with everybody else in fasting and davening to the Eibishter to take away the tzara. So the Gemara Darshins, Yetzei Chosen Mechedre Za'orain, the pasuk that refers to the Chosen coming out of his room hints at that the Orin is brought out into the street. Normally it's kept inside the shul like a Chosen stays in private in his room. And here we're bringing it out, L'Rechoy V'Shalir, they're bringing it out in public into the city square. V'chalo Mechuposa, Zat Torah, and when it says the Kala should come out of her chuppah, refers to the Torah, which is compared to a Kala. That also it's having to be, so to speak, schlepped out of its safe place, out of its hidden place, its place of honor in the shul, and brought out into the street. Dover Acha, another explanation. Yes, Yetzei Chosen Mechedre Zehanosi V'Kala Mechoposa Zehav Beistin. The Mishnah describes how the Nosi and the Abbeistin would be over there, and they would put ashes on their forehead. So the Chosen and the Kala refer respectively also to the Nosi and the Abbeistin. So the Nasi can be compared to a chosen, again, because he stays in his house and everybody comes to him. And the Av Beis Din is the one who teaches everybody Torah. And again, the Torah is compared to a Kala, so therefore he can also be compared to a Kala. So the Gemara mentions, Rav Chelboi, Omalei L'Rav Yehuda Nasiya. Rav Chelboi one time told Rav Yehuda Nasiya, this is one of the descendants of Rav Yehuda HaNasi. There were several generations of Nasiim after Rav Yehuda HaNasi. They alternated back and forth in names, it seems, between Gamliel and Yehuda. So there was Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's grandson, the first Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, and then there were several other Rabbi Yehuda Nasiyas after him. So which one this was, we're not sure. Anyway, he says, "Puk Iman, come out with us to the street when we're having the tefillahs for rain." But Sarach Over. And your tsar, that you're feeling bad for the tzibur, that we're suffering from the drought, will go away because your zchus will help that Hashem will accept our tefillahs. Different girsayers also, but there's different other girsayers. But tsar run ovar, that our tsar will go away. Or also there's a girsay instead of ovar, there's a girsay ovad with a dalid, meaning that your tsar will accomplish something. Your tsar, that you join us in the street davening and with the ashes on your head and so forth, that tsar will induce the Eibishter to have rachmanos on us so that it'll go away. Omer of Yosa, Hador Omer. So you see from that, since we see that the Nasi is essential to a fast for rain, so you see, Ilan Tani Yosa, Da Anan Avdin, we see therefore that the fasts that we make where we don't have the Nasi with us, less Inun Tanion, then they're not really considered fasts and they're not necessarily going to have the effect. Lama de less Nasi Iman, because the Nasi is not with us. So it could mean that Rabbi Yosef lived in a time when the Nasi, for whatever reason, wasn't participating in this. It could also mean that maybe Rabbi Yosef, for a period of time, may have been in Bavel, where they don't have a Nasi Bechlal. In fact, the Bavli mentions the point, Ein Tainus Tzibur B'Bavel, this whole concept of having a Tainus Tzibur like this, where it starts from the night before and so forth. There's no such thing in Bavel, because there's no Nasi, and there's no nothing, with the exception of Tisha B'Av.
Wasn't
a Nasi in Bavel? No, in Bavel there was a Resh Galusa instead. So the Resh Galusa had greater political powers than the Nasi. In fact, the Gemara in one place mentions that the Nasi is the Shevet. He's like the staff who has the power to beat people and force them, whereas the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael is the Mechoikik. He's the one who teaches Torah. Nevertheless, though, in terms of what we're talking about over here, it's the Nasi who has this ability to declare a Tainus Tzibur, and the Resh Galusa does not, at least of not that of that caliber. So the Gemara mentions in this connection to show how important it is when the Jewish people are when you have some when you have the when the Nasi is involved and when you have some that tsar of the Jewish people. Kosev echad omas pnei aparoiches, v'kosev echad omas pnei paroiches hakodesh. So you have like this in Parshas Vayikra. It describes first the case where. And describes first the case where the Kohen Mashuach, the Kohen who's been anointed with Shemana Mishra, does certain kinds of averus, and then he has to bring the power of Kohen Mashiach. He has to bring a special bull as a korban, which is brought as a korban chatas, but he brings the blood of it into the heichal and sprinkles it there, and then the bull is taken outside the machne and burnt. This will be mentioned in morning davening, parim anisrafim or seirim anisrafim. This is one of those parim. Then you have, and the Pasuk mentions that he sprinkles the blood as Pnei Poroiches HaKodesh. Then if the next section talks about when the Tzibur, when the Sanhedrin has paskened something wrongly, and most of the Tzibur has followed it, and you have the Par Helam Davashal Tzibur, where also you have the same kind of procedure, that's also one of the Parim Anistrafim, but there the Pasuk uses the expression as Pnei HaPoroiches, without mentioning HaKodesh. So what's the difference? Rab Acha Omar is Spalgun Rab Abohu V'Rabbanon. Rab Abohu and the Rabbanon disagree. Why the difference? One of them says, and Rashi mentions according to this on the Pasuk, when the Nasi only has done something wrong, fine, the greatness of the Beis HaMikdash and the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash is still there, so it can still be called Poreches HaKodesh. Chota HaTzibur, but once the whole Tzibur has acted badly, Ein Agdula B'mekoyma, then the Gdula is no longer there, and therefore, so to speak, the Poreches gets downgraded, and it's not HaKodesh anymore. That's one explanation. V'choron Omar, the other one between Rabbi Abohu and the Chachamim says, l'fisha chotu hamalamed alomid v'hamalamed, the reason why, in particular, why we're saying as pnei haparoiches, as though, so to speak, the paroiches itself is being taken out of the heichel, is l'fisha chotu alomid v'hamalamed, in the case of the parahelam davashal tzibur, those who are supposed to be learning Torah, the tzibur, and those who are supposed to be teaching it to them, the Sanhedrin, have both acted wrongly. L'fichach yetzu l'chutz, Therefore, they have to go outside, v'yisparsimu, and they have to, it has to get publicized what they did wrong. Al shem v'hotzias ha'pora, m'chutz ha'machne, as we find that the par has to be taken out of the machne and burned. Akosev and Eitz Yosef and the Mephoshim and Yaakov deal with various nuances of the actual, the correct girsa in the Gemara over here, because with both of them, the par is taken out and burned, so there's not really a difference between one and the other. It's not a difference in the psukim where one says akodesh and one not. So one explanation is just that, because it doesn't say HaKodesh. And the other one, not so much that because you take out the par and burn it, but the fact that it doesn't say Pnei Poreches HaKodesh makes it sound as though the Poreches itself is being taken out of the Kodesh and brought outside. Why? Because since everybody has done wrong, so it's almost as like as almost as if it's lost its state of Kedusha. Tony Chizkia, Remez, we also have a Remez in there. Kol Mokom Sheyesh Mashiach, Yesh Oren. The fact that the Torah puts together a Pnei Poreches HaKodesh, where HaKodesh also means the Oren with the Luchas in it, and it mentions that in connection with the Kohen Mashiach, so we have a hint there. Whenever there's a Kohen Mashiach, whenever they had the Shemen HaMishcha, then the Oren was there. Kol Mokom Sheyesh Mashiach, Ein Oren. When there's no more Kohen Mashiach, then there's no more Oren, because as we learned previously in Shkolim, and in Yerushalmi Shkolim, and in Bavli Yuma, when the Oren was hidden away, the Shemen HaMishka was hidden away with it as well. And from then on, the Kohenim Golem weren't anointed with Shemen HaMishka anymore. So the two things go together. That's another reason why the Pasuk mentions Es Pnei Poreches HaKodesh Davka in connection with the Kohen Mashiach. All right. Before we digressed in the last couple of weeks to talk about in Yon HaDiyoma, we're in the middle of talking about Dinim of fires on Shabbos, Rahman al-Islam. What you're allowed to save and what you're not allowed to save. So far we learned that the Chachamim put certain restrictions on what you're allowed to take out on Shabbos, because they were concerned that otherwise a person is going to be in such a panic, he may forget that it's Shabbos altogether and put out the fire. So like this one, he can only take out certain things, and that'll help him remember that it's Shabbos. So now you have the houses nearby where there's no fire, but they're afraid the fire may spread to them. They're allowed to save anything they want. In fact, that they would even be allowed to save things that are mukta, for example, money or things like that. Yesh omim, that you would be able to save them by putting on them, for example, food and carry them together. Usually you don't have a heter to carry mukta like that, but in this case, maybe the Chacham allowed it. Yesh omim, that even the whole issue of mukta is nidcha. In such a case, as long as you don't carry it someplace where you're not allowed to carry b'chlal, because that would be an issue torah, the Alter Rebbe seems to say as much. Be that as it may, Eivishter should help that we don't have to know any of these dinim in practice, and if it does, nochas reif avert min reich.